Hey, I want to thank Aaron for being our speakers for the last 6 months. We all been proud of the speakers, and when I saw Natalie on the calendar to speak tonight, I look forward to it. I've never heard you speak before, but I've seen you everywhere, so here we go, Natalie.
Thank you, Fred and Aaron, for asking me to share tonight. I feel really honored to be here, participate in my recovery. I'm very nervous that it'll go away, I was told. And welcome to the newcomers who are here. We're really glad you're here. I'm really glad you're here. And please go to a lot of meetings. And I don't speak for Al-Anon. It's just my own personal story, and I'm excited. I'm excited you're here because I know you'll find your story too. And happy birthday to all the birthday people. That was amazing. It's like 1 to 35. You don't see that everywhere. And that was very inspiring. And I also just want to acknowledge a lot of, just say, if I start crying, I'm totally fine. It just happens sometimes. And I'm not like sad or upset. I just get emotional. But this meeting like has been shared by many people. It is very important in my recovery because of the, you know, the love you feel in the room and the mutual respect and love that the men have with each other, and you can feel the sponsorship, and it is very rare. And I, for me personally, I feel like that's what innovation in Al-Anon looks like. It's a men's stag meeting with babysitting. And you can't innovate the steps. And I think like what you guys have here is a good, just such a rich thing. And I'm glad to everyone who takes a service commitment here, because you help a lot of men and you help a lot of women too. And so, everyone else in here, I did grow up in a home affected by alcoholism, but I remember vividly what it was like before that happened. I had really great parents. They were really smart. They grew up with family members who drank, and they noticed that there were negative outcomes, and they both decided not to drink, and they found religion, and they were gonna have a family and do better, you know, what they wanted to do better. And so I grew up in a house without alcohol and a lot of structure and principles and really good values. But that did not, you know, protect me and my siblings from alcoholism, you know, the disease of alcoholism. By the time I was 7, my older brother was full blown in his disease already. He was like 12 or 13. And I immediately started covering up in line for him. And no one told me to do that. It just felt natural. We had this unspoken thing of like, there's things we just don't tell mom and dad. And we never discussed that either. It was an unspoken thing we both knew. And so very, very young age, I became his defender. I became very overprotective because there were rumors, you know, I saw your brother in an alley or at this, da da da. So I became very quick to defend. And, but by the time I was in high school, I didn't really care anymore. I was really tired and of that. And by that time, my sister started, her drinking and using. And I immediately found my mode of coping with that was with relationships. And so that was how I dealt with it. And as you can imagine, my parents were very concerned with my two siblings because, you know, someone's always on the verge of suicide in our house. And I can laugh about that. I know it's not funny, but I can laugh about that now because it's just par for the course when you have active disease, you know, that type of stuff. And I learned so much going to LMI meetings about my parents' side of things because I was so resentful at them. And so resentful, in fact, I had determined through my extensive research that my siblings had a drug problem and that my parents hadn't done their job so enough. And when I was 18, I gave my parents a parenting manual. Because I figured out the problem and there is stuff that they can do to address the problem. And that was the only time I really thought my dad wanted to hit me, but recognizing like I'm too big to be hit. And it was a very intense moment in the kitchen. And so they didn't like take my advice. And basically I felt a lot of guilt because when you try to cure someone from a disease you know nothing about, I tried all my best ideas to you know, get someone sober, and it fails. The only natural outcome is that they should die, and I was that hopeless, and I understand that type of hopelessness and shame, feeling that way about someone you love tremendously. And only people in Illinois understood that, because I hated myself for thinking those thoughts. But when I came into Illinois, it was like, oh yeah, join the club, like we've all been there. And that type of honesty is what changed my life. But fast forward, like I said, my parents didn't listen to me, and I determined that it was hopeless and I just need to focus on me, and I'm gonna do me. And my solution was to get out of the house and go to college. And so I did that. And in my mind, I removed all obstacles for my unhappiness and my misery. And then I went to college and I just recreated that whole dynamic, you know, just different, you know, bodies, but same dynamic, you know, all the, just everyone I surrounded myself, you know, had a drinking problem or was, you know, like me, a very emotionally unmanageable, trying to manage everybody else. And the first time I thought I might have a problem, I was at a party, you know, and I probably should have been studying because it was school, but I was at a party, and it was a pool party, and we're all in the pool, and this guy pulled the strap on my bathing suit, and I was like, hey, quit it, like, leave me alone. And he didn't, he did it again. And so again, I said it louder, and some time passes, and he did it one more time. And my thought wasn't, maybe I should leave the party and go somewhere safe, or maybe I should do my job and go study, because I was on academic probation anyways. My thought was, if I hold his head underwater long enough, he'll stop. And that is what happens. You know, the literature talks about our thinking becomes distorted by trying to force solutions. And that's what happened to me, clearly. And I thought I, and that was was the first time my group of friends, you know, he was like Slovenian and tall, and we got in a physical fist fight, and my friends pulled me off of him and said, "What is wrong with you? Can't you tell he's loaded?" And that was the first time I was like, "Oh no, does everyone know that? Am I the only one who could not see that?" But I couldn't, because it was too familiar. And that was the first time I thought I needed help. The other time before this, see, right after I gave my parents that parenting manual, I started dating someone who mentioned they were on probation, but like I didn't hear that. All I heard was they liked me more than my best friend at the time. And so we went along our merry way, and so he was on probation, he violated his third strike, and we were in Newport Beach, and it is like what you see on TV, the SWAT team raids the apartment, their full gear, the little red lights on the wall, and they arrested him after they searched the apartment, and the captain of the SWAT team lectured me for 2 hours trying to figure out if I was an accomplice in his crime and or not. And after 2 hours of questioning me, he said, "You know what your problem is?" And at this, that was the first time it was presented to me that I might have a problem. And I just sat there listening. He said, "Your problem is you pick the wrong people." And I didn't know how true that was. And then shortly after that was the pool incident. But what I want to acknowledge is he said, "I've never met anyone who didn't cry or scream when we do a raid. And you were so calm. You seem suspicious." That's why he vetted me for 2 hours. But what he didn't know is that, you know, I come from a home affected by alcoholism. You know, cops rolling up or whatever, like you get used to that. And when his co-captain escorted me to my car after they searched it, she said, "I've never seen him take so much time to talk to someone before. Like, please listen to him." And that was God working in my life, you know, preparing me to come here to you guys. And so thankfully I had a coworker who was out in Alcoholics Anonymous while I was in school, and I would constantly talk to her about my family. And in my mind, you know, I saw her when she was drinking. I saw her go to Alcoholics Anonymous, and then she got everything I wanted. And I didn't think she deserved it because, you know, I wasn't as slutty as her, because in my mind she was super slutty. And her AA people would come to the coffee shop and I'd be like, "I don't think these guys want to help you. They're just like, you know, trying to take advantage of you." And she's like, "No, no." She relapsed, and then she came back to work, and then I saw her, you know, really work the steps, and her life transformed. And I had been in therapy. My therapist was actually not a fan of 12-step recovery. She actually discouraged me from going. But it was my coworker's example, you know, because when she got back and worked the steps again and got sober, I could see that there was something different. Women started coming to the coffee shop instead. And she came up to me one day and she said, "I can't talk to you about your family anymore. My sponsor told me to tell you there's a program for you. And I also am not talking to you about your family anymore." And I was like, "What are we going to talk about then?" But she planted the seed. I looked up an Al-Anon meeting and I went, and I felt intellectually, I understood the steps. I felt they were, you know, very genius. I loved the meetings, and I kept coming back. And, you know, I stopped seeing that therapist, you know, because she wasn't supportive at all. And that's okay. But I found people who understood where I came from. And that type of identity was so healing for me, and it gave me so much relief and hope. And so I started coming to Al-Anon, and I wasn't like a, or Stuart from Palm Springs, who like said he's slow. I'm super slow too. I identify with people who say that. I was not one of those newcomers that like looked better right away. I got worse, like, and it's true, I did. You know, 3 years in Al-Anon, it's, I had service commitments, like, I was I tried to be like a good foot soldier, I did everything that I needed to do, but I just didn't really understand the problem. The solution doesn't work if you don't know what the problem is. And so, like, case in point, like, I remember within my first year, I ran a stop sign, you know, just because my head was that fast, and sometimes I would do that. But this time I got caught, and so I got a ticket, no big deal. But then 6 months later, or some time passed, it's like the same officer pulled me over a second time for running the same stop sign. And then there came that question, what is your problem? You know, he asked me that, and by this time I had been going to meetings, like I kind of had an idea. And but then, you know, and so even though I had a sponsor and all this stuff and I would like share, I still didn't really understand what the problem is. And it, you know, my Al-Anon meeting shared a meeting space with an AA meeting. And so over time I met a sober alcoholic and we started dating, and I thought like, oh, this is different. Al-Anon's working. No one told me that I would get a boyfriend out of this, and they should have told me that from the beginning. We almost crashed into each other on the freeway going to work. We took the same freeway to work, and that scared me. And I understood that I was the problem, because everything had changed. I had removed myself from my toxic family. The person I was, there was no drinking in my life. Everyone I met or in my life at the time was in recovery, and I was still doing the same thing. And that's when the solution worked, which is, you know, the 12 steps that Alcoholics Anonymous gave us, and I'm really grateful for that. And it worked, because I finally understood that I was the problem. It didn't really matter what they were doing. And at this time, my brother had been sentenced to 10 years in jail, and my sister was like in her cocaine phase. And you know, they were always super successful. I was the one constantly failing, constantly grounded for having bad grades. There was a change, and people thought I lost weight. I actually gained weight. They just couldn't tell what was different about me, but it really was, you know, just the power of the steps and the power of making amends. And what that process taught me, a powerful tool I feel I learned through that process, was how to grieve. And me and my friend were talking about that. You know, I would cry all the time before I got here, but it was never really over reality. And the steps helped me see reality, and that's why the grieving worked. And it gave me a foundation to start mending damage, all the damaged relationships in my life. And through a series of just events and continuing to work my program, and you know, doing what's suggested, do learn about alcoholism. I would attend open AA meetings. You know, I just kept doing the things that were suggested. And when it came time to start mending my relationships, I didn't know how to, you know, heal the relationship with my brother, because it really got to the point where I didn't care if he lived or died. I didn't care if he was in prison for 10 years. In my mind, it was like, thank you, you know? And I got suggestions to just keep it super simple and light, and he's not of any particular religion, and so as a joke, I would send him a religious card for every religious holiday, because I didn't know what to say. And then over time, our exchanges got longer and longer. And, you know, when he would ask for money, because that's what they do when they're in jail, I would feel like so guilty. And I'm grateful for, you know, the people in Alcoholics Anonymous, because that's something I couldn't hear from like other Al-Anons. You know, they would say like, I needed to hear it from a sober alcoholic, just say, don't worry, he'll be fine. He'll find plenty of ways to get money. And they were right. And when he got out of jail, because of that suggestion, I was the only family member he didn't owe money to. And so we were able to like start on a whole new clean slate. And I'm really grateful for that gift. And during his time, you know, he stopped drinking and he stopped doing drugs and he cleaned up his life. And the gift he gave me was a level of forgiveness. You know, the kind of forgiveness where, you know, it's like, I don't even know what you did, but I love you. I can't even remember because I've forgiven you so much. And so the first time I saw him, it was that overwhelming. And we continued to have conversations. And I thought it was a cop-out when Al-Anon would say, you know, there's a page in the One Day at a Time, I forget what it is, but it kind of says, like, they're drinking, and then they get sober, and it's all, like, better. And I didn't really understand it until I got to experience that, until I got to see how he really is a different person, and that it's not a cop-out. And I can say, like, our relationship has been restored, and we have a good relationship. And talking with him, I started to remember things. And one of the things I remembered, after he got out of jail, we were talking, and I remembered that before he went to jail, he came up to me and he said, Natalie, your energy is super dark. I'd like to take you to a shaman to have your energy cleaned. He was trying to help me. And I had 8 years in Al-Anon at the time when this happened. And I woke up, when I remembered that, I just could not stop crying. And I called him in the morning, because if he tried to help me before he went to jail, that means he had quit drinking and using, and like I didn't notice. And so I called him in the morning and I said, hey, did you stop drinking and using before you went to jail? And he's like, yeah, I had a year. And I was blown away. And again, I just started crying. And you know, we had this great healing conversation. And the reality was, I was so obsessed with my sisters drinking and using, I didn't even notice he stopped, because I was that obsessed with her. And Al-Anon taught me how alcoholics say I love you, because I really didn't think they loved me or our family, because if they did, they wouldn't be doing that to us. And Al-Anon taught me just to be a sister and treat her like a sister. But with active alcoholism, you always need a plan A and a plan B. And when it came time to make my amends to her, I invited her to help me find an apartment, because again, we didn't really talk a lot, and she felt really honored that I asked her for help. And it was at 8 in the morning, which is early, and I had a backup plan in case she couldn't make it, but it was just something for us to do together and spend time with each other, because it was super awkward still between us. And she actually showed up at 8 a.m. on a Saturday. You know, she was strung out, but I could see, like, oh, she showed up. And we were in the car, and she was, I think she was driving, and I said, I just want to acknowledge that you being here at 8 o'clock means a lot to me, because I know you're not up until like 1 in the afternoon, and I just want to thank you so much. And I recognize like that you doing this, you know, it's like I feel the love from you, basically something like that. And from behind her sunglasses just came these tears, because for the first time I was actually acknowledging a loving action that she took. And that was the beginning of us having amended of our relationship healing. It wasn't until she got into her own 12-step program that she got to express herself. And, she informed my mom that I made my amends wrong. And, which is great. But what was great is that my mom and my dad knew what I was doing. They knew I was in Al-Anon, and they knew I had made these appointments with my siblings and stuff. And it was my mom, because that's what we do in my family, the triangulation. And so my mom's like, hey, your sister said you didn't make your amends right. And I was like, what? Like, you were there, like the whole thing. And my mom reminded me, she's like, your sister was detoxing, even though it had been a year. Like, she was still on the detox plan with her physician. And what it did is it made me pay attention to really understand, okay, what harm did I cause here? And to pray about that and be open to hearing whatever that is. I also had to do that with my brother when after he got out of jail, recognizing okay, he's a different person too. And that was my prayer for that year. And a reoccurring thing that kept presenting itself was me not supporting her. And she wasn't wrong. It's like she was newly sober in a band doing a dive bar tour, and I had opinions about that. And so I asked her, how much does it cost for your band to play? And she said $1,000. I was like, oh, I'm gonna get $1,000 on my tax return. I want you to come play for our family and all our nieces and nephews. And I have a big family, just go down the 10 freeway and you'll run into everyone in my family. I'm definitely local. And she didn't believe me, so I got the cash and I gave it to her, and she started crying. And I asked, why are you crying? And she said, because I don't know if I could ever give you something that means as much as this means to me. And I was like, actually, you can. Please stop bringing up how much Halloween candy I still owe you from third grade. if we could just leave the past in the past. She looked at me and we shook on it. It was such a great event. It was really nice. And, I think alcoholic women, quote unquote, are my emotional drink of choice. It was really my obsession with my sister that pushed me over the edge, right? And, now my program is a lot of, detaching from just the outcomes of, what happens to someone's body, especially a woman's body, from drinking and using, no matter how short a period of time it is. And so because of Al-Anon, I can support her and not have opinions, really not have opinions. And, there's still a lot of work to be done there, but we have a really good relationship today where it's a genuine friendship. And I, of course, my mom was the hardest person to make amends to, because, she didn't believe me because I had tried so many things before and I didn't really change. And so, she tested me a little bit, and I was taught, you just go be of service. And I did, and I would do the dishes, and then she caught on, asked me to vacuum, and I did. And then she asked me to clean all the windows on the outside of the house. And she saw my face and she was like, I'm just kidding. But the point is, I was willing, you know, and she saw that, and we had a really good conversation too. And the blessing that I have from, you know, Al-Anon gave me a language to talk about, you know, really painful things in my family with people, you know, my parents, you know, who aren't in recovery. And we had a really powerful conversation, you know, because she recognized that she wasn't able to point out things I was good at because she was so consumed, you know, with my brother and sister. And it meant a lot to me that she acknowledged that. And I'm really lucky to have a mom who could recognize that. So, you know, my dad's a different story. he's a really high functioning person, good standing in his community. And basically, when I went through my amends process with him, you know, it took a lot of prayer, but he said, you know, I think there's more people like you that I know that could really use Al-Anon. And, you know, he actually asked for literature and stuff. And that's been a whole nother journey. There was a lot of anger there, and Al-Anon helped me process that in a safe way where I didn't have to blow up that relationship in the process. Thank you. And so I have tremendous gratitude now that's not manufactured, you know, for my dad, and I'm really grateful for that. And the last person I made amends to was my grandmother. And her response was, why are you talking to me about this? Do you think I'm gonna die? Like, she got very suspicious. You know, like, I'm elderly. And I was like, no, Grandma, I just wanna make sure, you know, everything's right between us. And if there's anything, you know, wrong, you know, I wanna make it right. And she said, actually, there is. At your cousin's wedding, you rushed me. And I did. I didn't want to be late, and I was in charge of her hair and nails getting done. And she said, what you don't understand is I'm the oldest person in our family now, which means the wedding will happen when I get there. You don't need to rush me. And I mean, she's tiny. Yeah, she's like, but my point being I'm sharing all this is that, you know, I'm the only one in a 12-step program in my family, but I know Al-Anon has put my family together. And it's taught me really what forgiveness is about. And I just want to talk really quickly in my last couple minutes about service, because of everything that I just mentioned, like, I really was not gonna get married or have kids because I really didn't think I could do better than my family. I really thought I was, like, making a noble decision. And I didn't talk a lot about the traditions or the concepts or anything. You know, they're there and they're very powerful, and I got to, you know, learn slowly through examples. A lot of the men in this room have been examples to me of our three legacies, and it was through service that I got to understand, you know, every damaging thing that happened in our family was a violation of one of those principles behind me. And because of that awareness, it gave me confidence, like knowing, like, those tools are available to anybody if you want them. They're totally free. And now I don't feel like that doesn't seem so impossible to me anymore. And I wanna, oh, I forgot to thank my fiance for coming with me. you know, he's great. I love him very much, and he's really taught me how much of my program was theory versus, you know, real. He's very patient, and but, you know, service in Al-Anon gave me that, and And it takes everything. It's not one thing. Like, my biggest frustration in program is that, you know, I'll get really into a tool, but it really takes all of them. And I just want to thank you for listening to me. And thank you for being here. And thank you for giving me my family back. And thank you for letting me share.